Oh, what scenes there were at ANZ Stadium. New South Wales breaking the drought to secure their first Origin win since 2014, only their second since 2005. It would have been quite a night, I'm guessing, for the Blues camp, no doubt, off the back of that win. Matty Russell, g'day. Welcome once again to Take Me Now. I have seen it all.
G'day, Woz. Yeah, what a night for New South Wales. What a night for Brad Fittler. You said it a couple of weeks ago, and it has rung true, hasn't it? If he falls over in a gutter, he's the sort of bloke who gets up with a $50 note tattooed or plastered to his forehead. And well done, Freddie. Well done to the Blues.
There was just always a feel about Brad being in charge and the new regime coming in. It was a real breath of fresh air. They had a clean slate. They showed that with the team they selected, with 11 players making their debut in game one. There was a look about them already. They were all in great form. They produced in game one. They were up against it quite obviously again last night in game two. But seeing Latrell Mitchell being able to bust the line from close range, just use that bulk that he has. And Josh Addo-Carr. I love Josh Addo-Carr. He's one of my favourite players to call. I think he probably is for everybody who does what we do. But, you know, it takes a special talent to score that try that he scored last night. And with, I don't know this for certain, but if Laurie Daly, and I love Loz, great mate, worked together with him for a long time right here at Fox League and Fox Sports, as it was before then, I don't know how many of those players, it was still Loz and his advisors, and it was Sterlo, Peter Sterling last year. I don't know how many of those guys get a chance this year, maybe half a dozen of them. And maybe it wasn't just like the complete broom going through the place and starting again as Freddie and Brandy and Danny Badiris in particular were able to do with this side. I don't know how big a change it would have been and what the result would have been.
Well, you always do what you've always done, Woz. You're always going to get what you've always got. And over the last 12 years, heading into this series, it wasn't good for New South Wales. You mentioned a couple of highlights there. I go back to when Turvey Mortimer captained the Blues to their first ever series win, 1985. And last night, there's Nathan Cleary coming across in cover, a tackle that saved a try in all likelihood. Another number seven, a few generations on, doing it in Sydney to make sure that New South Wales achieved the series win. Fantastic night, and we go to game three now. Some people saying, why do we even need game three? Of course we need game three. You've got to have game three.
Yes.
For so many reasons, it's not even worth going into. But the Blues, after their first series sweep in 18 years. So can they achieve that? We will see.
Just to finish the point on Josh Addo-Carr, back off the back of game one on Twitter, I went on there after the game and I said, Josh Addo, I was so rapt to see Josh Addo-Carr do well, score on debut. I said, it's such a shame that a player exactly like Josh Addo-Carr and Nathan Blacklock didn't get a chance to do what Josh Addo-Carr did at Origin level for New South Wales, because he was the leading try scorer. You go back to the early 2000s, through that late 90s into the 2000s, he led the try scoring ranks four straight seasons. He was Josh Addo-Carr before Josh Addo-Carr came along. I have no doubt he would have been a great success for New South Wales. And I'm sure he would have played a dozen or 15 games for Queensland had he been a Queenslander, because they would have picked Nathan Blacklock. And it took some courage, I guess, from Freddie and Brandy. And I mean, Josh Addo-Carr in a number of ways probably picked himself. But there have been past coaches and advisors and selection panels who would have looked at Josh Addo-Carr and said, he's too slight, he's not a good enough defender. They would have found reasons not to pick him, but I love the way Freddie, Brandy and Bedsy all found a way to pick these players. They looked at the positives more and said, yes, there are negatives. And you can find negatives with all players in the NRL, apart from a very select few, perhaps. But you can find a way not to pick guys. They found a way to pick these players and they've been rewarded.
Well, we spend time, limited time albeit, with the coaching team and the advisors to the coaching team. And it became clear to me that they were going to pick players, regardless of what happened on the past, on form, on potential, then with a sprinkling of what they perceived to be possible magic from them. I like him, so I'm going to find a reason to pick him. So It was just a great approach, and it's great because I've won the series, obviously. Had there been 2-0 down, we'd be sitting here saying something different. But you're spot on there. Penalty try last night has caused a lot of concern. The first penalty try on Origin since Mal Meninga in 81 was, through my eyes, It's a penalty try every single day. Because I've heard this morning and in the fallout saying, how could the referees be 100% sure he was going to score? Well, nowhere in the rule book does it say the referees have to be 100% sure. The rule says if, in the opinion of the referees, a try would have been scored, barring the illegality. Now, when I looked at it first last night, penalty try. Penalty try. Do not say the referee has to be 100% sure, because nowhere in the rule does it say that, and that has become a rugby league myth. Penalty try. Good ruling.
Yeah, the more replays I saw of it, the more I could find a case for the Queenslanders to say they were pretty hard done by there.
Come on.
I'm probably coming down just on the side of penalty try, but there's a bit of doubt in my mind as to actually to how much Ben Hunt moved and whether his movement was anything other than what he was doing, you know, in a natural sort of sliding movement. He didn't go to his right that much. He did go to his right. Did he just try and clip him on the way through? Maybe he did, and that's probably the reason they were happy to give the penalty try. There was a bit more grey in that. It wasn't completely black and white for mine. Had they said sin bin only, no penalty try, I'd have been okay with that as well, I think.
And that's the other part of the argument. Okay, penalty try. Why doesn't Ben Hunt go to the sin bin? The argument is, well, the try's been awarded, therefore you're not going to penalise them doubly. But I would have thought that it was penalty try and you've offended, you can have 10 in the bin for a professional foul.
And I've also been, like, the sin bin originated from ice hockey, where a player would go for 2 minutes into the penalty bin for, you know, cross-checking or whatever you do in ice hockey. And that's where it originated from. And like ice hockey, I've always been of the belief that if someone goes to the sin bin and the team has 13 players still, scores a try, the penalty is over. They've had the chance to score that try. They've scored the try. And once they've scored, whoever it was, in the case of James Roberts last night, James Roberts had Queensland scored in 2 minutes in under the W. Smith system.
Yeah.
James Roberts comes back having served only 2 minutes of the 10, if that's the way it works out.
Okay.
What do you think?
I don't like it. No. If you're sent for 10, no matter what happens, spend your 10 minutes. Keep it simple. And that was another part of the element, wasn't it, that New South Wales defended last night for the last 10 minutes. We know that under that old edict, Queensland always score last in Origin, 18-14. The Blues down a man. You thought, hang on, this is set up for another Queensland swoop late. And then they go to Suncorp Stadium to decide it in Game 3, where if you look at the stats, they would have won the decider had it been a decider in Queensland. But no, it'll be to avoid the sweep and a big finish by a brave New South Wales team. Did you like Sunday night Origin? The first time since 2001 where all three games were played on a Sunday night. We returned to it in 2018. Fan or not, was?
I like Origin no matter what night it's played on. You know, I'm pretty easily pleased.
I keep thinking it's Thursday morning.
Yeah, well, it feels like. Yeah, exactly. It works on Wednesday night and has done for so long for a number of reasons without getting too technical as far as TV ratings are concerned. But basically, on Sunday and Monday nights, there are more people watching TV than there are as the week goes on. So Tuesday, your total audience basically falls a little bit each day. The total eyeballs watching TV gradually goes down all the way pretty much until Saturday, until it jumps up again on Sunday when everybody, as it was tradition, you'd all be at home. Especially in wintertime, it's
Sunday
cold.
Night movie.
You're having a Sunday night roast or whatever it is, you know, it might be takeaway Indian or fish and chips or whatever it is these days that people have. But there's that sort of traditional Sunday night dinner. A lot of people in front of the TV, so Sunday night, Monday nights have always been big raters. Apart from the fact that you have, in opposition to Origin on a Wednesday night, not much as far as the opposition channels are concerned for the Nine Network. On Sunday night, the other free-to-airs, 7 and 10, are running their best shows because Sunday night is the big rating night because, as we said, there are more eyeballs in front of TVs. So there are more reasons, I guess, not to watch Origin, and that was borne out in the numbers last night where in Origin 1, 3.456 million around the country watched Origin 1 on average. The average audience for last night's game, 3.163, so basically 300,000 less watching Origin, which is why brings us full circle to the discussion that happened in the lead up to game two, where Wayne Bennett, who was over there in Denver, heading up the England team in their game against New Zealand, he was of the belief that Origin should be a standalone, you know, month or 3 weeks, whatever it is, and maybe it's, you know, 10 days between each of the games. Brad Fittler, he was of the same belief. He thinks maybe that's the way to go. And as we had over the weekend with the Pacific Tests, the Women's State of Origin game, and you could work in other games around it to pad out those 3 weeks of what would be Origin-centred football. The problem, though, is Sunday nights don't rate as good as Wednesday nights. They never did. That's part of the reason why they went away from Sunday nights back in 2001, back to Wednesday nights. And I guess if you're paying big money for the rights, you want to try and maximise your return. And the best way to do that at the moment is Wednesday nights. Now, there's a compromise at the moment as part of the Players Association and the players having a stronger say in the last negotiation with the CBA trying to make sure they limit the amount of quick turnarounds. So this was part of a compromise that there is a Sunday night in the middle. I think it's a nice idea from Wayne Bennett and Freddie to get it into a nutshell, but I don't think it's going anywhere, certainly under this current rights period, which has another four years to run beyond this. So it'll be, you know, 2023 by the time we might see a change to the way Origin is formatted at the moment. I can't ever see it being a month-long Origin festival.
No, and Brad Fittler alluded to that last night. He wants the players to be given enough time to make sure that Origin is not a glorified club game. He wants them to be able to prepare, to rest, to relax, and to make sure the standard that has taken Origin to the top of the pops when it comes to Australian sport to stay there. And a lot of people might say, well, a week's enough to prepare for a footy game. Well, if it's 1 week after another week after another week, which is basically what you're doing at club level, then it is no different. So I do have some sympathy for what Brad Fittler had to say in terms of let's make sure that we don't change the timing of Origin and as a result the standard drops. We do not want the standard to drop because that is why we sit glued to the television year in, year out when it comes to Origin.
And if it's 3 weeks between game one and game three, which is what it would be under that system that Wayne Bennett and Freddie were talking about, you would have somebody who had played their last game a week before Origin 1, maybe being considered to play in Origin 3, who hadn't played any football for a month. Would that be an issue? Maybe not. Billy Slater came out last night and played for the first time in a month himself with that hamstring injury. I think it was 5 weeks since Billy had played. So, you know, you would have, depending on your attrition rate, injuries and selection changes as well, you might have players who haven't played much football for a month, and you know maybe that is an issue in itself. But as we said, it's not going to change next year. And there's every year you can set your calendar by it or set your watch by it. There are discussions about Origin and how to fix its balance in the NRL season, and trying to please everybody. Well, you're never going to please everybody. There's always going to be there's going to be a compromise in some way. And this is the compromise at the moment. It's not going to change for 4 years, as we said.
Yeah.
And I don't see it changing long term after
that. And I don't have a problem with it under the current system. I quite like Wednesday, Sunday, Wednesday, with the representative weekend parked in the middle. Any more on Origin, or can we spill over into the representative fixtures aside from New South Wales, Queensland was?
I wanted to touch on the fact that when Boyd Cordner almost KOs himself on the hip of his club teammate, Dylan Napa, the first person there, and with great concern for his health, was the great Alan Langer himself, who spends a lot of time on the field, even though he's still wearing a yellow shirt, not a maroon shirt these days, but he's out there a lot, whether it's with the Broncos or Queensland. Alfie was there. His first thoughts were for the care and the health of Boyd Cordner. And I thought, you know, in amongst everything that happens in Origin, and sometimes the enmity and the animosity, the back and forth, and Regan Campbell-Gillard coming out before game one saying, I can't wait to get out there and kill people. In amongst all of that, still the respect and the care for a well-being of a current footballer from a former footballer was phenomenal to see.
That was a real highlight for me as well, and there was a tweet along those lines. Great to see Alfie showing care for the fallen blue, the captain, Boyd Cordner. So I retweeted it and then got a comment back saying, he only went to his assistants because he wanted to make sure that Boyd Cordner was taken from the field under the HIA rules. Now, you know, I'm all for a conspiracy theory, but there was none of that. No. We know Alfie. Yeah. Alfie was genuinely concerned for the likeable Boyd Cordner. It was a great show of sportsmanship, and it was great to see that even at this competitive level, New South Wales, Queensland, there's still a bit of humanity in the participants. Mm-hmm. And well done, Alfie Lang. It was great.
And also, just to wrap up, from a New South Wales perspective, James Maloney, who'd been there with losing efforts and, you know, had massive question marks. He was up until, you know, a week out from the selection of game one. You know, they weren't convinced in the brains trust of the New South Wales camp with Brandy, Freddie and Danny Badiris again. They had big question marks about James Maloney around his defence. And Freddie, you know, put it out there quite publicly in the lead-up, that month leading up to game one. I want to see James Maloney's defence. I want to see him defend like an Origin game is on the line. And he came out and had a shocker in defence for Penrith in that period. And Freddie thought, is he taking the mickey here? Like, what was that about? Like, you know, racing up out of the line and leaving holes and team scoring tries against the Panthers. He thought, how are we going to pick this bloke? But then he played a couple of good ones leading into Origin 1. I guess, in a way, picked himself. But there was a little bit of trust there as well from the coaching staff. Well, he repaid the trust because he stood up and he took the lead role with Nathan Cleary still feeling his way, I guess, at Origin level. I mean, it was Maloney. I'm a notepad hero. Log each set and who kicks the ball at the end of each set. And it's, you know, Maloney, 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 Maloney. There's a Cleary. There's another Maloney. There's another Maloney there. Then there's a Cleary. It was James Maloney putting his hand up and saying, I will get us around the park. He was enormous.
Our Achilles heel during this Queensland dominance has been the halves. So much chopping and changing. Before last night, the last winning halves combination for New South Wales, Trent Hodkinson and Josh Reynolds. Well, we know now Nathan Cleary, barring injury, will be there for the next decade, you'd imagine. And James Maloney won't be there for that time, but he has ushered in a half that will remain there for the best part of 10 years, surely. And, you know, I don't have the same expertise as Brandy and Danny Badiris and Brad Fittler, obviously. But when I saw them questioning James Maloney's defence, I was a bit perplexed by it. We know that because of his body shape and because of any number of reasons, he's not going to be your best defender in the team. But he's one of the best game managers in the league. His form, aside from a few missed tackles, was exemplary. And I thought to myself, he's not in the team to tackle. He's in the team to control the game and usher the game where you want it to be ushered to. There are 16 other blokes in the team to tackle. So, you know, maybe you want his defence to improve a little bit, but don't not pick him because of that reason. Mm. Thankfully, they did pick him. And sure enough, Jimmy Maloney plays a major role in New South Wales winning the series.
And because if you had, you know, defensive concerns beyond James Maloney, well, you wouldn't have picked James Roberts.
Or Latrell Mitchell.
And you probably wouldn't have picked Latrell Mitchell. So, you know, there's three straight away.
Yeah.
Nathan Cleary is a solid defender. We've seen that throughout his, you know, nascent career in the NRL. On the other side of the coin from New South Wales, Queensland, you know, while the winners are having parties, then the losers are having meetings. And the meeting around Queensland in the next couple of days will be, yes, what do we do with the halfback position? Because for the most part, I thought Ben Hunt has been very good through two Origin games, but again at the end of game two last night at ANZ Stadium, the question mark is still there. Can Ben Hunt get a team home when it matters? And I guess this question, you know, begins back in 2015 in the grand final. They lead the Cowboys. They went very conservative, maybe on Wayne Bennett's instructions against North Queensland, but they kicked the ball out for minimal gains. They didn't try to put the Cowboys under much pressure in the second half of that grand final, and the game management came back to roost when they score the try. Ben Hunt, as it turns out, coincidentally drops the kickoff and Thurston kicks the goal, field goal to win the game. And from that point on, maybe there have been question marks about Ben Hunt and his game management. And I haven't really ever seen him stand up and say whether it was with the Broncos. And so far, so good, I guess, with the Dragons. But Dragons fans, more so maybe than Queensland fans this morning, because they'll be thinking now, okay, Origin is done. Dragons fans are now thinking only about between here and September and then what happens in September, because they will be there when the whips are cracking. But when the whips are cracking, can Ben Hunt get them across the line? And there is still a question mark on that at the moment.
And the people who want to knock him will go to Exhibit A last night while James Roberts is off the field. Queensland attacking a 12-man New South Wales, and on the third tackle, he kicks the ball dead, handing New South Wales the 7-tackle set. So the big question leading into last night was, could Ben Hunt deliver the game win for Queensland? The answer was no. And if you asked the experts last night, what would you do to Ben Hunt then if he couldn't muster a Queensland victory last night? Plenty of them were saying, well, it will be his last Origin. And then the follow-up question is, okay, if that's the case, as has been the case, where does Queensland go now? Now, Daly Cherry-Evans, you'd imagine, is not going to come back in, given what we've seen. There you go.
Pen. So, and his form, he doesn't warrant it at the moment.
So
he was in good
Taylor.
Form at the start of the season, but his form has been, well, it's been, you know, way below par, to put it nicely, in recent games, especially against the Warriors the other week. I mean, I don't know what was happening with Daly that night, but their kicking game and his game management was all over the shop.
Okay, well, no series to lose. You've already blooded Kalyn Ponga. You've got Cameron Munster, very much the future of Queensland. Do you go with Ash Taylor as halfback for Queensland? The other spin-off there could be that you don't actually drop Ben Hunt, but include him in the squad somewhere as a hooker. You've also got to fit Kalyn Ponga in there. It'd be harsh, I believe, to say to Andrew McCulloch, ta-ta. So what does Kevy do? Let's answer the question simply. Should he pick Ash Taylor for Origin 3?
I think he'll stick. I think they will actually stick with Ben Hunt, and they'll give him a chance to say, OK, look, I'm back on home soil in front of my home fans. I know this place pretty well. And give him the series to say, and give him that last chance to show that, yeah, maybe if it's a tight game again, and you would think it would be, the first two certainly have been. So I don't see why game three is a blowout either way. I think he's probably entitled to get the entire series, especially now that it is, in commas, a dead rubber, to see if he can be the player going forward. I think they'll want to see one more time, because if he gets to that chance again in game three and then fails, well, then I think that impacts on him, you know, well beyond next year, as far as it might be tough for Ben Hunt to find his way back into the Origin team for Queensland, you know, for years to come. Mm. And the rest of his career could come and go, and he's in the second half of his career right now. It could pass him by. He'll never get selected again, depending on what happens in Game 3. But if he plays well and shows that, yes, he can make those key decisions, not kick one dead the first chance they get off the back of the sin bin, as it was last night, and get repeat pressure, and then set up the try or be part of that pressure to produce a try, then I think he could be the halfback again going into 2019 for Queensland. But should he fail, that might be it.
Oh, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think they will stick with Ben Hunt. I think they should stick with Ben Hunt. Otherwise, Queensland risks falling into the same boat that New South Wales have rowed in for the past few years, chopping and changing their halves in a desperate bid to find and scramble to some winning solution. Give Ben Hunt another go. Even if he is masterful and Queensland win game three, the critics won't be off his back, but he will buy time to start next year's series there as well and win game one and two for Queensland. Then the critics can be told to go jump in their own boat.
Yes, but that's basically it. Until he wins a series with Queensland or a premiership with the Dragons this year, the question mark will still be there about Ben Hunt getting it done in the crunch. You mentioned Ash Taylor as an option. I think he might be certainly an alternative down the track. But if I was Ash Taylor, or anybody who knows Ash Taylor, I would get a photo of Jonathan Thurston with his shirt off, a bit like Greg Norman, maybe not completely nude.
I saw you tweeting that. Greg Kardashian, you called him.
Greg. I mean, you know what? He's got a great rig. He's really fit for a 63-year-old, but he's got all the time in the world to be a really fit 63-year-old. Oh. And his efforts on the golf course and everything in business have given him that time. So I'm not, running him down just because he's wealthy and has the time to be really fit as a 63-year-old. But, mate, we know you're fit. You don't have to get your gear off to show us. It just screams desperation for the Shark.
If I take my
gear
off.
I know I've got off a bit of a tangent here, but the Shark, we don't need to see you in the nude to bloody know that you're a fit 63-year-old.
I can sense it was eruption. It was blow up here. I'm with you. If I'm 63 and publishing photos of me without my kit on, can you come and hit me with a 4-iron over the head?
Please.
No.
And outside his house, this strikes at maybe the narcissist that is the Shark, and we work on, in front of the camera, on TV, but, Greg has can you imagine at your house having a bust of yourself outside the front door of your house?
No.
Can you imagine doing that? Do you know anybody apart from Donald Trump? Know anybody apart from Donald Trump and the Shark who could possibly have a bust of maybe Cristiano Ronaldo?
Yeah.
He strikes me as somebody who would have a bust of himself outside the front door. But I mean, what is going on with
the
show?
I applaud his front. I applaud his...
Can we cancel his passport?
No, we don't want to cancel
it. Can we have him permanently
deported?
He's just
cut a little bit differently to the rest of us wasn't. Oh, I admire his front. And, you know, maybe front. We should back ourselves a bit more. Maybe we should be a
he
bit
He showed
more.
Us everything but the front.
Yeah, I know. I wonder whether that was Greg's
decision.
He had
a three-wood in hand.
I wonder whether it was Greg's decision. I wonder if he would have, you know, spread eagle, you know. Right, eh?
Nothing would surprise me comes to the shut. But to get back to my point, having just got off on a bit of a tangent.
Sorry.
Ashley Taylor needs to get a photo of Jonathan Thurston just in his shorts maybe at training on a hot day up there in Townsville and plaster that around his lounge room, the kitchen, his bathroom, the bedroom, put it on the mirror, on his dressing table, whatever, and look at JT and the condition he has been in throughout his career and say, I need to look more like that than the condition I look like now. Now, I know body shapes can, you know, not everybody has the exact same body shape, and you can wind yourself into a bit of a rabbit hole and find yourself in trouble talking about body shapes, but he's a professional athlete. We're talking about this from purely the point of view of being a professional athlete. Ash Taylor is not as fit as he could be, and he would be a better player if he was able to go harder, longer throughout the 80 minutes of a game. I've got no doubt he could be a long-term Queensland halfback.
Yeah, not everyone can look like me and The Rock was, but, you know, I don't know how fit or otherwise Ash Taylor is. And you're right,
he's
there's different body shapes.
He's not fit enough.
Is that why he's not as consistent through games
I've
and from
no
week
doubt.
To week through,
I've
in your
I've got
eyes?
No doubt.
Well, surely the Gold Coast training staff are capable of knowing that and getting him into shape. Yeah,
well, I think they do, but I think it's hard sometimes to get that message through. It's not a coincidence that Jonathan Thurston has looked the way he looks and played the way he has played throughout his entire career. The two aren't mutually exclusive. He's been able to play the way he has played because of the work he has done to get ready to play.
And Greg Inglis is another one whose weight has fluctuated. And keen students will say when GI is the weight he is now and in the condition and the trim he is now, that's why he's playing his best footy, not when he's a fraction either side of that.
Again, there's no coincidence there as well. Let's move on from Origin and talk about the Pacific Test on Saturday night out there at Campbelltown. You're out there for both of those, of course. PNG, 26-14 winners over Fiji with Jared Hayne wearing the number 7 jumper. And then Tonga, I guess no surprise, 38-22 and then had the chance at one stage over Samoa to be 50 or 60 or
it was gonna
goodness
be.
Knows what the score was going to be at one stage because... You know, the Samoan defence, as it was during the World Cup, just wasn't up to scratch. They missed tackles in the middle third especially. They just got monstered by the Tongan forwards, didn't they?
Well, I could speak about this for 2 hours. It was a great night to be at the footy. I was lucky to be calling Fiji, PNG, then sideline for Tonga Samoa. And I've said to anyone who wants to listen that I know the grand final will bring a special atmosphere. I know that Origin creates, especially at Suncorp, a furnace atmosphere. I cannot remember a better rugby league atmosphere per head ratio, if I can use it that way. So there were 17,800 there.
But it felt like 100,000.
But it felt so good. And the flags waving. During the war cries, there were men, women and children just screaming wildly behind me. And I thought, what's going on? Is there a fight? Am I missing something? They were just into it. And even when Samoa scored first, Tonga went up a gear. And Samoa went with them. And they had their supporters split. A bit like Canterbury Parramatta in 2009 at ANZ Stadium.
Yep.
It was just brilliant theatre. The war cries were all you expected and more. Samoa's start was smart with James Gavitt scoring the first try. Then Saliva Havili scoring for Tonga, the two men who led their war cries. I think Fossey said it in commentary. You couldn't have scripted this better.
Nah.
And the atmosphere... So I've been lucky enough to be involved with these games since 2013 at Penrith. And each year they get better, in my eyes. Sell-out crowds. The question is, what do we do with them now? Now, if you're getting a sell-out crowd at Campbelltown, that sort of atmosphere, why do you try and fix what ain't broke? But I do understand the argument that, hang on, if we take this game to Fiji or Port Moresby or maybe even Eden Park in Auckland, do you get a bigger crowd?
It's a sell-out.
Eden Park, Auckland.
Yeah, 45,000.
That's a sell-out.
It's 45,000, no doubt.
Well, that is what I would be considering next.
For sure.
And I spoke to a security guard on Friday. I went to watch the teams train. And the security guard told me that he had family and friends coming from Samoa, Tonga and New Zealand to Campbelltown to be part of the week.
Yep.
Some of them couldn't even go to the game because they didn't have tickets. But they were travelling to be there around training and just to absorb the atmosphere. I thought, we are onto something here.
Yeah. No question.
We are onto something.
Yeah, as we said on last week's show in the build-up to the Pacific Test, do we need another game in Campbelltown? What does that bring to the table compared to having that game at a sold-out Eden Park or somewhere
like
else in New Zealand? I think that has a bigger impact for rugby league as a world game. Well, not that it's a world game in the way that soccer is a world game, but in trying to make the game bigger. And trust me, we need to make the game bigger.
Yeah.
And we'll get to Denver in a moment between the Kiwis and England over there. But you know, I think that has a bigger impact in New Zealand, and that can't be a bad thing, as opposed to we didn't need, and it was great to see that crowd, but that crowd could have been twice as big somewhere else in New Zealand. I think that has a bigger impact for rugby league.
Yeah, I would like to see an investigation into why Eden Park, Auckland can't be used in 2019. Given that it's a sellout crowd in Campbelltown on Saturday, you'd like to think that Eden Park would sell out. And imagine that, 45,000 with that sort of Tonga, Samoa atmosphere. I don't know whether I would even keep it as a double-headed, was it? Why can't we take Fiji PNG to Port Moresby?
Yep.
And that would be a sellout as well. I don't think that the double-header element necessarily has to be retained either.
No, that's a good point as well. I mean, you could, and, you know, depending on which way you go down the track, if Origin ever did become, you know, the Bennett model or the Fittler model, then you would need more games and you could have a whole series of Pacific Tests during this month. Like I said, I don't think that will happen, but there's no reason it needs to be, because the reality is on Saturday night, 95% of the people there were there to see Samoa versus Tonga. The colours in the crowd, I mean, if you have the, if you've cornered the market on selling Tongan flags, you are smoking cigars and riding in the back of a Bentley this morning, because, my goodness, you did pretty well out of the flag selling business on Saturday night out there at Campbelltown.
And before I get away from PNG Fiji, I was really happy for James Seguiaro. He is the first father-son combination to represent the Kumuls. His late father, Ifiso, played a test for the Kumuls. And for the first time on Saturday, James Seguiaro captained PNG. One stage he made a bust, offloaded to Justin Ollam, and Papua New Guinea were away for a try. They beat, ranked 10th in the world, PNG. Fiji ranked 5th and did it well, 26-14. I don't think you'll see Jared Hayne in a number 7 jumper anytime soon after his performance for the Barty, but it was a great night for PNG. And in November, the Apex Summit is in Port Moresby, can you believe that? So all the world's leaders, including Air Force One with Donald Trump on board, are going to be landing in Port Moresby. Why not play the Kumuls against someone in Port Moresby in November? And guess what? Have D. Trump sitting front row. Imagine that. He'd love it.
He could do the kickoff.
You're fired. Get him off.
He could have the the celebrity kickoff.
Imagine, how
with
would that
Donald.
Be? I think he'd have an air swing.
And then somebody just, like one of the Kumuls, just appears from the ruck and just levels him with the best
and
cutting tackle, like just hit him in the waist and cut him in half.
All that's left is his hairstyle, just on top of the surface there.
Just a wig, a rug, that fairy orange fairy floss just flying off his head as James Seguiaro just smashes him on the halfway line as he kicks the kick.
And then you have Melania doing the presentation, speaking pidgin English with
fantastic.
One of the Kumuls. That'd be great.
Fantastic. What about Denver? It was early yesterday morning. Live on Fox League, the Kiwis against the England. England too good after being down a couple of tries pretty early in that one. They won it 36 points to 18. There was so much talk over so many months in the lead-up to this game. Andrew Webster from the Sydney Morning Herald. Now, I really like Webby, and he's a really good writer.
Yeah.
But I think it was probably back in March, Andrew wrote that how will it look in front of 75,000 fans at Mile High Stadium if someone keels over convulsing and vomiting from altitude sickness in the middle of the game? Denver, it's Mile High Stadium. But as was proven yesterday in this game, and this is the first point to make about it, after all the talk about players keeling over and dying in the altitude, now, it was hot. It was played at midday for time zone reasons. But nobody was ever going to keel over and cark it or be vomiting or having altitude sickness. It's 1,600. Katoomba is 1,000 metres.
Right.
So have you ever been to Katoomba and thought,
I have.
I'm a bit light-headed,
no,
maybe after a big night.
Yeah, I was going to say.
At the Katoomba RSL or something.
On a Sunday morning.
If you, like, it's, you know, it's not that much higher in reality than Katoomba.
Yeah,
so, well, you know, there was drama and, you know, all sorts of scenarios floated by the alarmists. Thankfully, none of those came, you know, and they were never going to come true. They wouldn't be playing, wouldn't be able to play professional sport there had anybody been keeling over and vomiting in the middle of the game for the Denver Broncos in the past.
And I've been looking for a crowd figure. I can't find a crowd figure. Is that conveniently under wraps?
They said 19,000.
Okay.
I don't know the venue at all. It's a 70-something thousand seat venue. It looked to me, it was 10 plus there. Maybe it was 12 or 13. Or I don't know whether they're padding. You couldn't see the camera side as per usual with the broadcast. So there might have been more on that side than there certainly were over there on the eastern side. I'm guessing it was in the sun, perhaps. But, you know, I thought it was good. I praise the promoter, Jason Moore, for having the kahunas.
Mm.
And he put his kahunas, certainly his money on the line to take the game there. Now, I'll guarantee you he has made a loss on taking this game over to Denver. And it's part of, you know, he has the rights. I don't know if people know this, but in 2025, the Rugby League World Cup will be played in the United States. And he has the rights to promote the entire World Cup. So he's trying to build an audience, get people, first off, to know what rugby league is, because, you know, if you speak to, and I have lots of friends in the US and have worked with lots of people in the US, and they assume rugby league is just rugby. They don't know there's actually rugby league and rugby union. All they know is rugby, and they, you know, most of them would fall over if you told them, hey, there's actually two types of rugby. They go, what? What do you mean there's two types of rugby? So that was the first point, to try and differentiate between rugby union and rugby league. And then also get a bit of notoriety over there. Now, it's not going to be a game changer. We're not suddenly going to have the Denver, you know, whatevers, the Denver Broncos, you know, Mark II playing in the NRL. But, you know, all full credit to him for putting his money on the line and taking this game over there. It worked out well for the New Zealand Rugby League. They're $500,000 better off. They certainly need the money because got very little at the moment. The English Rugby League, they're also $500,000 better off. So there's a win straight away for, and, you know, and hopefully that money can, you know, help while they've got to pay players and staff, whatever else, for this trip, the New Zealand Rugby League. Some of that money perhaps can help grow the game in New Zealand as opposed to maybe purely growing the game in Denver, Colorado or Northern America.
And when I watch this game, I'm looking for a positive. I want to know, what's the benefit of going there? Well, I'd like to know the economics of it a bit more. And the crowd wasn't big enough to say, well, that's worthwhile taking it there. The difficulty in getting players there and back, not worthwhile. Does it lay a platform to grow the game in North America? I don't know. So the only really positive thing I can find is what you've just mentioned. The fact that the New Zealand and England Rugby League get a financial boost out of it. And just as an offshoot topic, you know, again, the discussion comes up. The Americans referring to rugby league as rugby, and we tend to get our noses out of joint, but someone presented a different view. There is rugby league and there is rugby union. Why should we just hand over the word rugby to union? Why shouldn't we embrace calling rugby league rugby and say to union, which last time I checked had a few struggles on its hands, we'll say, well, we're going to call ourselves rugby and be proud of it. And it was a different view on that argument that I'd never considered. And, you know, I thought, you know what? Take a deep breath, puff your chest out and say, we'll happily be called rugby, and if that treads on a few toes of the union patch-wearing boys, so be it.
I'm not so much worried about the rugby union and the tweed coat, leather patch-wearing brigade in rugby union, but, and that'll get people offside straight away, I don't care. But, you know, if you're from the rugby league side of the fence, you know, you're a leaguey.
Yeah, that's right. They're rugby,
that's
we're league.
Differentiation.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, I would struggle suddenly just referring to rugby league as rugby as the NRL
rugby competition. Should we shift our mindset?
Competition?
I would too, but if after 5, 10, 15, 20 years, we're happily referring to ourselves as rugby and we've sort of pinched the name from union,
they're
getting the poos because people are referring to rugby union as rugby, haven't we achieved something?
And the only way you could ever make that happen is to make the game, A, more global and have more nations play it at a tier one level. And the only way to do that is to have more internationals spread the word around the globe And, you know, it's whether it's, so it's trying to expand it. Maybe, obviously, the Super League has, they have the UK, they have a team in France. They may well have a team in Toronto on the east coast of America, maybe as soon as next year, if the Toronto Wolfpack qualify for the top flight of the Super League. That may happen. If it doesn't happen next year, it might be the year after. Ricky Latelli has signed a big deal, $700,000 a season to go and play. So they've got money and they are dead set serious about entering that top flight of rugby league over there. But the only way to maybe be the dominant rugby code is to have the international game stronger, and things like Denver and having more internationals can only be a good thing.
Yeah, and you know, to back that up, Tonga, I said this in the commentary on Saturday night, in 2013, they were ranked 10th in the world. 5 years down the track, they're ranked 4th in the world and going forwards in a hurry. When Jason Taumalolo was introduced to the crowd, it was like the King of Tonga had been introduced. They went wild. So that's 5 years. They've gone from 10th to 4th. They might not always go forward at the same speed they are now, but where are they in 5 years from now, was Tonga? Are they a tier one nation?
Oh, well...
They should be, shouldn't they?
I think that... Well,
and they should be challenging and beating Australia on the current trajectory.
We need to play Tonga and Samoa more.
Yeah.
You know, the Kiwis are strong quite obviously. England is strong, but we need... And the only way they will get... They can keep playing each other in these one-off tests, but they need to play more against New Zealand, against England and against us, to grow that number from, you know, three, you know, top nations at the moment to four, then five, then six, then seven. I mean, that's the only way you do it.
Samoa can get there.
It's one step after the other.
And so can Fiji. And so maybe can PNG.
That's right.
Fiji, the list of unavailable Fijians, as I'm reading through that on Saturday, I'm thinking, wow, inject them into this team. And, okay, they might be beating PNG and they might be challenging Australia with a few more developments down the track. So I can see the top tier three being the top tier four, five and six over the next decade, which would be great for international rugby league. And then maybe we can start saying, we don't care being called rugby, call us rugby all you like.
Well, and just to finish the entire discussion on this part of it, we are very good in rugby league at saying how good our product is. And it's the greatest game of all is the you know, the trademark. If it's so great and it's so good, don't be afraid to spread the word and say, hey, have a look at this. And that's exactly what happened in Denver on the weekend. Somebody took the initiative to take two teams, two internationals over there, and it was hot and it was steaming. That probably led to the style of football, but there were plenty of points scored. There was end-to-end action. Players were out of gas. You know, it was like a track and field meet. And so the conditions, and maybe like the slightly thinner air maybe played a part in that as well, but nobody keeled over, nobody convulsed, and the footy was really good to watch. I'll give it that. So let's hope it happens again next year. Let's hope that the promoter, Jason Moore, hasn't made too much of a loss and he can see the value in taking it back. He's got a three-year deal to take that game back there, but I guess it's under the proviso that he can make a buck out of it at some stage, because while it's great, you want to try and, you know, promote the game around the world, but, you know, the budget only goes so far.
And I've heard him referred to in a not-so-kind way at times as the promoters trying to make money. Well, hello, that's what promoters try and do. Any bloke willing to back himself, willing to promote the game, I applaud. I don't say anything negative about him at all. Yeah. He's over there having a crack. And if you're going to be criticised for having a crack, then the people doing the criticising should be whacked.
Yeah. And nobody had a problem with a private promoter coming in and doing the Auckland Nines.
No.
And then nobody will have a problem with the NRL basically, you know, stealing the idea and taking over as the promoter of the Auckland Nines next year and years down the track. If that's the way it is, they'll say, isn't this a great carnival, this Auckland Nines?
100%.
Yeah, but it took a private promoter to take the chance to get all the clubs and to work with the clubs and the NRL. And that was a big issue, obviously, with Denver, that the clubs didn't want a bar of it because they weren't going to get a buck.
99 blokes out of 100.
As simple as that.
Yeah, would say, too big a risk, don't want to go near it, too scared for me, but one says, I'll have a crack.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you back him and applaud him rather than criticising him for he's trying to line his own pockets? Yes, he is, because no one else will try and do it.
Mm.
Anyway.
Interesting scenes over there, quite obviously, with the first game in Denver of that note, and great scenes at North Sydney Oval to kick the weekend off on Friday night with the first Origin game of New South Wales versus Queensland. Now, we've seen plenty of New South Wales versus Queensland games in the past, but they weren't purely a State of Origin-based event, as it is with the men's now since 1982 for the first time as a full series. So it was fantastic to see the women out there. And while the women's game is still a developing game and the skills compared to the men obviously aren't there, you know, the passing isn't as fast and as crisp, but what is there, there's no doubt in equal bucket loads as far as the men's game to the women's game is concerned, is the passion and the pride they have in the jumper, the desire to win. The hits are ferocious. I've been lucky, as you have been.
To be tackled by a few of them.
No. Anyway, but you know, the Auckland Nines, back to the Nines for a moment, you know, the three, the Gillaroos and the Silver Ferns, the Kiwi Ferns, when they've played each other over there in the three Nines games over the course of a Nines weekend in Auckland, those three games are the most anticipated games of the weekend, apart from maybe the final.
Yeah.
See, the women going at it, they hit as hard as anybody. My good, the tackling, and Queensland brought an ambush defensively against the Blues, but they were enormous, New South Wales, finding a way to win that game, and Queensland were obviously right there with them and could have easily won the game as well. You know, and to talk about the effect of what that has as far as women in the game and then maybe the potential for young girls now watching to play the game or take up the game, it might be just touch footy or it might be Oztag. But on Friday night, I'm sitting at water polo training. My son is there in the pool and huddled beside me with the phone and one little earbud in each as we were listening to the game, my daughter, and she could not take her eyes off it. And at one point, we had to go and get something to eat, and she insisted that we have the phone on and have the earbuds in the whole way while we went and grabbed something to eat and came back for the last bit of the water polo training session because she wanted to see how the game finished. She was so engrossed in it. And I thought, wow, this is evidence right here of the effect it can have of young women, no matter what it is, but in this case it was rugby league, whether it be industry or study. But if young girls and teenage girls see women doing something, that's a great example for them and they will aspire to that and say to themselves, why can't I do that? That's how I was running around the streets, you know, when I was 12 years old, trying to be a fast bowler because I wanted to be Dennis Lilly. And there are young girls watching that game who want to be Matty Studden or Steph Hancock.
I wanted to be Jeff Thompson. So Olivia was engrossed in
you and
in
I
the
could have been
footy.
The fast bowling attack been. For Australia.
We could have been. I would have bowled a few wide. Was she engrossed in her French exam as she was the women's rugby league game?
Not quite engrossed in her prep for the French exam last week as she was in the Origin game.
Well, I was at North Sydney Oval, and before the game, speaking to a few of the organisers, I wanted to know about the crowd. How many are you going to get? And I said, we could get 600, we could get 6,000. We just don't really know. And sure enough, they got 6,000.
Yeah.
And they got best parts of 750,000 people watching the game, which you
that
know,
was the big thing.
That was huge. Yeah. And, you know, you've detailed how your daughter was one of those people and it will get bigger and bigger and it's another brick in the wall for rugby league, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, the game needs to expand. The game needs to grow, not just in terms of clubs and cities, but the people who consume it. It's all very well to have you rusted on people who are there every weekend, but we need more, and the women's game is a way to achieve that. So well done all round. The first Origin, the first of many, I reckon, for the girls.
Great scenes afterwards as well. There were hugs, there were kisses, there were trophies being handed around, people on the field getting selfies with the players. It was a massive success in every way, and there it was, a weekend without NRL football, and we all survived. We all had games to watch, and I enjoyed in different ways each and every one of them.
And having been at North Sydney Oval, we have a retro round coming up on Fox League. I would
strongly suggest
to
Bear Park
that maybe it can't happen this year, but in future years, for retro round, let's take a game back to North Sydney Oval. That fig tree at the northern end, yes, the creature comforts aren't there, but it is like immersing yourself in a time capsule.
Hey, you don't have to go to North Sydney Oval to lack creature comforts in the NRL, do you?
Well,
when
someone
you go
said,
around the suburban grounds of Sydney.
If you can play games at Leichhardt Oval, you can
play
games
at North Sydney
Oval.
There's no question about
Let's
that.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Let's move on to round 16. It's back in action this week, the NRL. It kicks off on Thursday. Now, there will be a quick turnaround for the likes of James Graham and also Gareth Widdop coming back from that match playing for England against New Zealand.
And as they go from 1,600 metres above sea level to about 3 metres above sea level at Wollongong on Thursday night.
Down your part of the world.
What about that?
You would think the Dragons, with Origin players, of course, backing up for all of these games as well, But the Dragons will be too good for the Eagles.
No altitude sickness for the Dragons in this one at all. They'll be breathing in the sea mist there coming off Wollongong City Beach and beating Parramatta, despite the weary legs.
One of the concerns from across the ditch was how many Warriors players would be playing in that game and then returning to play on Friday night this week.
Not enough.
I don't think there'll be any dramas with players returning as far as, you know, having played at altitude and then coming back to play this week. It happens every week in Super Rugby with teams going to altitude in South Africa. They don't have any issues with that. I don't think the Warriors players will. And they'll have enough time to get ready for that. They play some players off, you know, on 2 days rest off the back of Origin games normally. Yeah. So Warriors Sharks.
Good game, eh?
Good game and a big game for both clubs for different ways. The Sharks trying to force their way into that top four. The Warriors trying to prove that they belong in the top four. At home, how do you see this one?
At home, Warriors, but it's a beaut game on paper, and it's a big game for the Warriors because they've lined up at home against some top four wannabes and failed to deliver. I keep going back to that Roosters game at home, beaten 32-0. Well, here's another chance to take a step away from the doubts that came out of that result by beating Cronulla at home well.
And as far as key players are concerned, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck and Sean Johnson, both at home rested. Tohu Harris, yep. Same boat there. Jared Beale would have been in the Kiwi camp. He didn't go over there also. So they will have players rested and good to go in key positions on Friday night against the Sharks. Now, I'm going to be in Adelaide.
City of Churches.
And speaking of travelling around the country or internationally, I was in Adelaide for this exact same game last year. 25,000 plus
were there. Mitchell Pearce field goal
to win the game at the death for the Roosters after the Storm coughed up a bit of a lead. Brodie Croft, who had been enormous filling in for Cooper Cronk last season, made one poor kick in the entire game. It gave the Roosters a chance. They took it, launched a comeback. Pearce kicked the winner. I think this will be a fascinating game again, and it's a real toss of the coin to come up with a winner, given how good the Roosters have been playing.
What a fantastic Friday on Fox League. Warriors, Cronulla, 6 o'clock Eastern, into Roosters, Storm. Again, there's no home advantage here, is there? But I'd go with the Roosters on the back of their recent form. Nothing wrong with the Storm, really, either, but I'll just stick with the Roosters.
What about Panthers and Seagulls? Three big games on Super Saturday. Panthers and Seagulls, this one at 3 o'clock. You'd think the Panthers, again, players backing up, but it's a big turnaround from Sunday night all the way to Saturday. They've got 6 days to prepare off the back of Origin. I don't know that James Maloney and Nathan Cleary in particular...
6 days to sober up for Jimmy Maloney.
It might well be the case.
I heard him on radio this morning.
There's no Regan Campbell-Gillard. We know that off the back of his fractured jaw, but... You know, the Seagulls have been pretty average in recent times, haven't they? The Panthers should win that one.
Yeah, it should be a manly win into Newcastle, Canterbury. I'm actually doing some touch football up there. Matty Nable's going to be in the commentary box for that one. Newcastle Dogs, I'll be riding all the action sideline. And, you know, they're at other ends of the table to the Warriors, Cronulla, Roosters, Storm, but tricky to pick. The Dogs were dreadful at Belmore. You know, on that form, they won't be beating Newcastle, but the injuries continue to mount for the Knights and there'll be some bounce back for Canterbury. Look, Newcastle at home, stick with the home team.
I think the Bulldogs at the moment, if you're in a tipping comp, they're just untippable because there's obviously big issues out there. They're an unhappy camp and it's been this way, I guess, for 18 months. Nobody knows who's staying, who's going. Am I going? Are you going? You're my mate. Are we going to be a team next week? Next month, next year, I mean, nobody really knows what the Bulldogs will look like down the track, and I think that's having a big effect on the team. And while ever that's the case, until they get things sorted out, I would suggest, unless you're an absolute Bulldogs tragic, just don't tip them, and you'll be right more often than not, no matter who they play.
Well, I actually give Dean Payne a lot of credit. Amid such a mess, they had a string of such narrow defeats. They were right in the games. They were punching above their weight, to use a boxing analogy, but then that collapse against the Gold Coast... I don't know whether there's a way back from that in a hurry. So Newcastle, but was Saturday night, Broncos, Raiders. This is your game, right? You go from Adelaide to another city of churches, Brisbane. Broncos, Raiders, the big... I know everyone's going to say Brisbane will win that, but remember Josh Hodgson. Remember the way he returned against West Tigers and they were a different team in the blink of an eye, the Raiders. And this is like the game against West Tigers for Canberra. This is huge for them.
It's a four-point game.
Exactly. They've won one four-point game. This is another one. Yep. Can they do it? you know, plenty of Broncos backing up from Origin and rep commitments as well, more than the Raiders. So this is a danger game for Brisbane.
Yeah, it certainly is. And obviously with Origin to consider and everything else, and Josh Hodgson's return, who just transformed the Raiders, I will temper that by saying he transformed the Raiders against the Tigers.
That's right.
Let's see how they go against better opposition, because the Tigers have been in a rut for the best part of 2 months now. Should the Broncos win that game, they'll be 3 wins clear in the 8 of the Canberra Raiders. And Canberra, having played 14 games, it'll be 15 games played, 24 games in the season. They'll have 9 games remaining off the back of this one. If they're 3 games behind Brisbane with the run they have, and we've been through it a number of times now on the podcast, but the Canberra Raiders, off the back of Brisbane, they play the Bulldogs and then the Cowboys. So winnable games, both of those. Then they play the Sharks, the Storm, the Panthers. They've got the Tigers again, but they finish with the Roosters, the Rabbitohs and the Warriors. 6 of their last 7 games against teams currently in the top 8. They need to make hay while the sun is shining, and the sun with Josh Hodgson is back. It certainly looks like it's shining for Canberra. They need to beat Brisbane. They need to beat the Bulldogs. They need to beat the Cowboys, and they'll be favourites for at least 2 of those next 3 games. They need to beat the Tigers in round 22. They've got to win more than their fair share against those other 6 games. If they don't win this one, I still can't see how they make the top 8.
So basically you're saying that Broncos, Raiders, if the Raiders don't win, lock away your top 8, only the order within the top 8 will change.
Yeah, I think so, because the Tigers are 7-8 going into their game, and they're the next game this weekend. They take on the Titans at Leichhardt Oval, 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. Does the Leichhardt magic work again for the Tigers as it did when they played the Cowboys? Was that their last win? No, they beat the Bulldogs 14-10 back in round 12. They beat the Cowboys at Leichhardt back in round 10. Haven't won apart from that game against the Bulldogs since, and they lost 3 before that win against the Cowboys. So their form is disastrous for a team that was 5-1.
I'm calling this game was, and I'm thinking of asking the producer, can I do a pre-match interview with Robbie on the scoreboard with a couple of beers? How many can we have before kickoff? 3 or 4?
Oh, yeah, 3 or 4. That'd be okay. Yeah, be all right.
And then, so what an element. You know, Robbie Farah, we're assuming he's going to be picked. You don't sign him mid-season and not play.
And then not pick him.
Yeah, so he'll be
picked. He's not Tim Cahill.
Will he be a starting 9? Or off the bench?
Oh, he's starting.
Starting number 9. There you go. What an element. So he runs back on the Leichhardt Oval, game 248 for West Tigers. And you're right, not Tim Cahill. They're not coached by Bert van Marwijk. So that's going to be, that game will be sold on that element alone. You know, everyone's going to be tuning in, I'd imagine, to watch Robbie run on to Leichhardt again in those famous Tigers colours. It's a great element. I'm excited about that element of the game.
Can you believe it? We had this discussion last week on the podcast and I lost my top. I blew my top. What was it all about when Robbie was shipped off and now he's being shipped back? You know, it gives him the farewell. That's terrific for the Tigers. I don't know what it means ongoing into 2019 for the Tigers hooking role, because that question mark, a bit like Ben Hunt with the Dragons and I guess Queensland, that question mark hangs over him.
And Benji, will he be back?
Well, that's right.
From a calf injury, he was said to be not going to be available the week after.
If Robbie kills it between now and the end of the season, whatever point that is for the Tigers, maybe he's back.
Well, the game for South Sydney was, he hadn't missed a beat. He'd been playing with North Sydney.
He'd been good.
Rare start for South and played really, really well. And South finishes off tropical North Queensland.
Yeah, up there in Cairns at Barlow Park. Bunnies and the Cowboys. The Bunnies with the Burgess trio coming back from Denver. Sam, Tom and George, they'll all be back. GI, Dane Gagai returning from Origin duty. They'll have a full 7 days preparation.
Yeah.
All of those blokes, Sam and Tom and George, laying flat on a business class bed on the way back from Denver. That, you know, people were saying, oh, they're going to fly back. And I think they'd be able to fly back to the peak of their lives. They'll be okay. They'll be able to play on Sunday against the Cowboys up there. I don't see that Anthony Seibold will be resting anybody, given the full week's prep. And I think the Bunnies will win.
I've got to correct myself. It is far North Queensland. I get very picky
FNQ.
Up there. Yeah. Townsville is North Queensland. Cairns is far North Queensland. I think I called it tropical North Queensland. It's far North Queensland. Right. South Cowboys, really a home game for the Cowboys, who have obviously a legion of support. But South have been going to Cairns for a while. And given their form, we know there are South Sydney fans in every city of Australia. So you're leaning the way of South Sydney, I trust.
I am. It's not F and Q, it's FNQ.
Well done.
North Queensland.
Well done.
That is the show. Origin, women's origin, international football. So much to talk about this week. There'll be a lot to talk about when we gather again right here in the digital studio that is the Fox League podcast department. We're going on TV.
Wow.
The pod.
Who would have thought?
You'll be out in the future. The pod has been such a smash hit with all of you listeners. And thank you for tuning in and listening to this dribble each week. But we are going on the stream, or we're going on the website. I don't know. I'll be across it more in the weeks to come.
You done much TV, what?
But you'll be out a couple of times I've been on TV. And we might even be expanding.
Oh, wow.
Smith,
you got some news.
Smith and Rasol. See, Tintraz, we're going big time and going to be on the telly.
Okay, that's good. I look forward to that.
That we know. That may well be next week. Until then, you can take me now. I have seen it all.